We will start our work session tonight. I'd like to welcome everybody here again on June 16th at 6:15. We'll do a roll call, starting with Councilman Plummer.
Plummer present.
Hurst present.
Meekum present.
Bangeter present.
Heyman present.
And I'd like to excuse our mayor, who will be here later this evening. Our first business item is Davis County Housing and Homeless presentation, and we have Ryan Parker here to give us a presentation. We'll turn the time over to him. Oh, we're going to give Mike a little...
I'll just give a quick introduction.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Counselor. About, I think it was like 4 months ago, 4 or 5 months ago, we received an email from Mr. Parker at Davis County, as well as a phone conversation with the city planner regarding desire from the county to come and present to the Centerville City Planning Commission. At the time, that was the direction that the Davis County Community Development Department was looking at evaluating the homeless services options throughout the county. I'm not sure if they did in fact do some presentations to other communities, planning commissions, but I believe they did. We were a little concerned, so we reached out to City Manager Brent Hansen to ask him what his thoughts were relative to that, if that was appropriate or how he wanted to proceed. He did talk with the mayor about it, and the decision ultimately was to bring them to give them the opportunity to come and present to the council in lieu of that conversation with the planning commission. Felt like it was the better venue for that. So Brent did eventually set that up with Mr. Parker to come present. As you all are very well, probably more so than even I am aware, this is an issue that's very significant for Davis County, trying to identify what the best solutions are for the homeless shelter. There are communities where the homeless shelter had been identified and those communities had a difficult time with that option. It's happened twice now. There have been temporary options in Clearfield City. Even there had been an option at one point with North Salt Lake here in the south area, but that didn't make sense from a geographical location discussion. So he's here tonight to discuss this further. Maybe he can share some more information about what some of the other feedback from communities has been thus far. And with that, unless you have any other questions for me, I would turn it over to Mr. Parker.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Parker, for being here with us tonight.
Thank you. Thank you, city officials. It's a pleasure to being here. I appreciate your time and allowing us to come and speak with you guys. So as the distinguished gentleman stated, my name is Ryan Parker. I'm the Housing and Homelessness Coordinator for Davis County. What brings me here today is, if you all recall, a few years ago, we had some state legislation passed regarding homelessness, Code Blue, Winter Overflow, things like that. And it was requiring all counties of the second class to have a year-long response to homelessness. Now, as far as Davis County, we had some of our leaders go back to the state, to Capitol Hill, and said, hey, if we could maybe focus on a carve-out, the language is obviously very broad, as most legislation on the Hill is, where we wanted to see if we could find an alternative solution, because we didn't believe a shelter was basically the best fit for Davis County. Shelter has its place. We do have some shelters here, but they're more, I guess you could say, specific, like pathways or a safe harbor, like things like that. And we don't have drop-in shelters, if you will. And we didn't think that was necessary for Davis County. So we wanted to go back and research what would be the best upstream solutions for helping our citizens experiencing chronic homelessness. Because what we believe is that the key thing to ending homelessness is housing. Housing, 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 housing. The philosophy of housing and the way we get there is always up for political debate and what have you, but housing and homelessness. And so that's where we wanted to come back on, and that's where, after what our research was done and what we are doing as a county, we wanted to go out and start a meeting with all of our wonderful municipalities. This is my first stop tonight. After this, I'll be going to West Bountiful. Last week, we were already speaking with folks in Layton. We've already spoken with Woods Cross, North Salt Lake, Clearfield. So we are going and meeting with everybody because we want to let everyone know what we are hoping to see come to fruition here in Davis County within the next year. And so the presentation we are talking about is permanent supportive and transitional housing. So I'm with the Community Economic Development Team. You'll see, you probably are familiar with my esteemed supervisor, Ryan Steinbiegel. So we are the Ryans. So we'll just call me Parker if you're ever in the office, because he has seniority. We also have our grants administrator, Samantha Brand. She's absolutely fantastic, fantastic in this work. I actually go back with her several years with the Housing Authority of Salt Lake County. So there's a lot of experience on this team looking at how we can best as a county see where we can help address and support and facilitate resources when it comes to homelessness in Davis County. So when talking about homelessness in Davis County, we have our point in time count. This is from last year's. We don't have this year's numbers in just yet, but last year in 2025, we had a total count of 127 just for the sake of conversation. If you are not familiar with the point in time count, that is an annual mandate from HUD through our local COCs, continuums of care, where we go out in every jurisdiction, whether it's Davis County, Salt Lake County, Utah County, volunteers will go out on three consecutive nights in a row on the coldest nights of the year, typically in about the end of January, and count all of our unsheltered homeless population. And so last year we did 127, and we do have a breakdown of the individual kind of like subgroups. So you'll see we had about 62 that were survivors of domestic violence. We had about 35 of adults with mental illness, so on and so forth. And then how has that number fluctuated over the last 4 years? In 2021, we had 72 in our point in time count, 55 in 2022, 79 in 23, 65 in 24. Then you see that large increase of nearly double in 2025. When talking with our point in time, kind of our coordinators, Open Doors, who are a fantastic partner. If you aren't familiar with them, these are absolutely salt of the earth folks out there. And they just opened up a brand new location in Clearfield. It was fantastic. They were letting us know that the reason why they saw such a disparity was that in 2024, some of the volunteers, what they were doing is they were counting just surveys, not observations. So what the volunteers do on the point in time count, they'll go out and they will actively make contact with people experiencing homelessness on any one of those point in time nights. Now, obviously, that's at 3 in the morning, and sometimes people might not want to take a survey. If you were to knock on my door at 3 a.m. wanting to do a survey, I probably would say no, let alone a person who was in a tent or in their car. So if people don't want to take a survey, we just count it as an observation. 2024, they were just doing surveys. So there was that disparity, what we saw. So we are here to talk about housing because we decided to go back and say, okay, if we are going to work with the legislature on us not needing to come up with a shelter plan here in Davis County, what type of housing model do we want to look at? And we found two that would be the perfect fit for something here in Davis County, which is transitional housing and permanent supportive housing. So the difference is that what is transitional housing is exactly as it sounds. It is a time-limited stay. We practically use this as kind of a de facto shelter instead. Where we will get folks referred through like a street outreach, like an Open Doors or what have you, and then they would be placed into transitional housing and they would kind of be triaged and intaked and see what is their need and what kind of resources they are like. And we're looking at anywhere from like 6 months to 24 months. What we see actually a big transitioning housing model that's been going on actively recently in Salt Lake County is the conversion of motels. And so we have looked at seeing would transitional housing work in places like a Woods Cross or some of these other older motels. And you know there has been good positive feedback on possibilities of exploring that. And so with transitional housing as well as permanent supportive housing, the big key here is on-site services. That is the big method here. It's not just giving a person a roof over their head, which is obviously something they need. But we actually get to address what can we do to actually help someone self-correct and stabilize and return back into the community. And so with transitional housing, though, there is a little bit more, again, it's a little bit more programmy. And what I mean by that is there's not a right to tenancy. You don't sign a lease. It's kind of like a sober living where you kind of just basically have a program manager where they can maybe have certain requirements that a landlord couldn't, like sobriety requirements, no alcohol. They can do dorm checks, bed checks, things like that. So it's more so just kind of a program model, if you will. But it absolutely is a very successful model when we're especially talking about the different demographics of people experiencing homelessness. You might have, yes, the individual who is 60 years old, disabled, wheelchair bound, but then you also have the 23-year-old who is physically able and capable and just looking to kind of get back into the workforce. And so permanent supportive housing. Well, the only difference between that and transitional in lies the name, which is the word permanent. However, when people hear the word permanent, they're just thinking, so people are just going to live there for the rest of their lives? Well, some do, but before we get to that population, all of what we mean by permanent is right to tenancy, where this is an apartment model, except The only difference is where you and I could not qualify or apply to live there, they would be referred through a, you know, through a process with a service provider. These individuals would then just lease up into an apartment, and they would have the right to tenancy. It'd be no different than any other lease agreement you would find in the country. And then just every year, the landlord, as long as the individual is compliant with their lease, they're up to date on their rent, they will be offered a new lease every year. So instead of like, well, we're just going to non-renew you, like that wouldn't happen. They would at least have the right to first refusal. But again, the big thing that I always like to point across when we're talking about these kind of housing models is, again, on-site services. Because as we go into our next slide here, oh, not that one, boom. Housing first. So over the last couple of years, we have heard a great debate about housing first. Now, what housing first has kind of undergone over the last few years is we were seeing a lot of people that were applying with HUD dollars, trying to get all the different funding programs that they could, with good intention, right? Saying that, yes, we are housing first. And housing first essentially just states we want to get people off the streets, and that's when we can start dealing with the underlying issues that brought them into homelessness in the first place. Because if we were to say you need to find, to correct your mental health, we need to get you employed, we need to get you stabilized, we need to get you sober, we're going to do all that while you are sleeping out in your car behind Walmart, that kind of is a little bit of a tough sell. But here in with Housing First, we say we're going to get you stabilized, and then we are going to help address over the long term the underlying issues that contributed to your homelessness in the first place. The problem is that when you had many well-meaning organizations that were touting themselves as Housing First, they didn't have the infrastructure on the back end. So they would get the Housing First vouchers, the subsidies, and they'd get folks quickly in and leased up, but then they just say, okay, we'll check in on you in a couple weeks. Which really isn't what Housing First is about. What Housing First is to say is that we are going to provide wraparound services and meet you where you are at. And when we talk about these permanent supportive housing models, you have individual units that are on the third, fourth, and fifth floor, and then on the second floor, that's where your case managers are. That's where your APRNs and your nurses are, where we conduct med management. A great model of that would be the Central City Apartments, operated by First Step House, right there in downtown Salt Lake off Fifth South. It's right across from the Smiths. I would encourage anyone, if you are out there, you're going to a U's game or something, just drive by and point out the housing project. They just look like any other apartment complex, but this is where we end chronic homelessness, because these folks are able to live amongst their services. They're able to simply just walk out of their unit, take the elevator downstairs, and go see a nurse, and go see a case manager, to go see a counselor, to go to meetings, and to have that on-site support. And that is the game changer, and that is the successful definition of what true Housing First programs are. And so, okay, great, Ryan, you came out here, you're telling us such fun, fluffy tales, and this all sounds great. What is the hard data on this? What does this model actually work? Because you're saying this is what we should do as a county rather than shelters. Why should we do permanent supportive or transitional housing models? Does this work in other cities and other counties? Yes, but I decided we wanted to talk right here in Utah, not about Minnesota, not about San Francisco. What does this model look like here in Utah? Well, through the Office of Homeless Services, utilizing the Homeless Management Information System data, we saw that folks that entered the permanent supportive housing had a 93% retention rate of staying stably housed, or even moving on to just private housing, just to their own, just basically being able to self-correct and self-stabilize back into the community. 93%. I wouldn't take anything less than that on skydiving, let alone permanent supportive housing. And so that's why we say, and we've seen that rise year over year over year over year. And then that is right here in the state of Utah. So what are the benefits of housing the chronically homeless? Besides just talking about the improved health outcomes and reduced mortality, as I'm sure any governing body of a municipality can say, the decrease of reliance on our public services, of our first responders, our law enforcement, our medical costs, our fire, being able to reduce the burden on our public services is right there, just a fantastic burden that's relieved for the city. We see the lower public costs, we see the increased housing stability, and we see the enhanced community safety and reduced crime rates, especially particularly in what we call the quality of life crimes, the trespassing, the loitering, et cetera. You can't loiter in your own apartment. I mean, I guess you could, maybe my teenager would, but I don't know. And then, okay, so altruism is fantastic, right, Mr. Parker, but here we are running a city and altruism does not pay the light bill. So what does this model look like as far as if we were to consider a model like this in our backyard? What does this benefit us as Centerville, as a community? So the economic benefits of an affordable housing project such as a PSH or a transitional housing model is just as we already discussed with the reduced public costs. But the next one I like to talk about is job creation and local spending. So here at these projects, we have job training programs, people that come in and help sponsor or get folks into different job programs. But then when we're talking about local spending, I currently live in Tooele, and any Tooele City Council public official out there worth their salt will tell you the big thing they're trying to do is try to keep folks in Tooele County, because I believe 87% of us commute into Salt Lake County. That's all of us taking all of our dollars out of Tooele County, and they're trying to figure out how can we keep folks in. And they're even talking about maybe should they blow a hole in the mountain. Good luck with that. But nonetheless, when we are talking about Davis County residents, you see the point in time count, 127, how many people were we really talking about? Well, we were actually going over through the homeless management information system, and we saw that over 250 individuals that stayed in both the Weber County shelters and the Salt Lake County shelters had a last known address that was a Davis County zip code. Our folks are going to where the services are. So yes, while I can say, granted, that Davis County does not have a homeless problem the size of San Francisco, we do have it. It's just folks have to go to where they can get help, where they can get relief. One of my other privileges I have working with Davis County is I do manage our Code Blue Overflow Shelter in Clearfield, Winter Overflow Shelter in Clearfield. And now, granted, this was a very, very freak warm winter. But nonetheless, when that Code Blue hit, we had families calling us wanting to get motel vouchers. We had individuals coming because they were finally able to no longer burn through their fixed income on motels and get a nice warm place to stay. The need is here in this county. It's just folks just don't know where to go. Sometimes there's just not a lot of resources here. And that's why we are saying that what this is going to do is not only provide that stability for our citizens in need and not have to put burdens on Weber County, put burdens on Salt Lake County. Folks get to stay here and they get to spend their dollars in our backyard, in our communities, and gain that stability. And so what does a permanent supportive housing project or a transitional housing project look like? As you see, we can create things we have fantastic designers and fantastic architects. These are not the 1980s projects in Chicago anymore, folks. We have fantastic designs. We can talk about the traditional kind of apartment complexes. But we also are thinking like, so what would we think this community would look like? Do we want to say maybe something more townhomes, maybe something more tiny village? Really, there is no limitation. We try to be as innovative with these approaches as possible. Now, the adaptive reuse, as we all know, we are pretty landlocked in this county. So we are definitely going to have to get creative in the RDA section. So is this something where we talk about transitional housing models with motel conversions? Really, we're leaving no stone unturned. But what the big important thing is that regardless of what kind of model we would like to use, we can make this model fit any city, any neighborhood's desire, aesthetic. It can always conform. It doesn't have to take over a community. It can become part of that community. And so where we're currently at, as Davis County, we are just currently meeting with different stakeholders. Again, we're meeting with all the municipalities, but we've also been reaching out to individuals and organizations that want to be a part of this, and the feedback has been tremendous. So Davis Behavioral Health, they've already expressed that they'd be interested in providing those on-site counseling, mental health services. Open Doors, our street outreach team, our primary boots on the ground for homelessness in this county, would be a great referring partner, a great long-term peer support partner. The Davis Community Housing Authority, when we're talking about rental subsidies. And then Utah State University and Davis Tech have both said that they would love to provide scholarships for work and trade programs for individuals staying in this project. And so next steps, finally, why I'm here. Again, thank you so much for your patience allowing me to ramble through all this, and I'll be happy to answer any of your questions. So what we are doing as a county, where are we at in this process? So what Davis County is looking at doing, we are looking at facilitating a permanent supportive housing project somewhere in Davis County. And that's why we're meeting with every municipality. We are looking at trying to identify decent parcels that would be a good fit. We're talking public transportation access, things like that. And when we've brought this up with other planning commissions and city councils, they've wondered, like, would there be proper infrastructure? All those things are being considered. We are looking at being a partner in this. And so we would just ask if the opportunity arises, because, again, we don't know where this parcel would be, is that if we were to find a parcel in your area, that you would just consider supporting it. And finally, I should have had my email. Nope. Well, either way, I'm happy to answer any other questions. And as always, we are looking at making this a long-term process. This is not the first nor the last of these conversations we are having. We look forward to just getting to meet with everyone and getting all the feedback we can in this process, because we believe that, again, ending homelessness all starts with housing, and it's the way we do housing that matters. And permanent supportive housing is, we believe, going to be the best fix to help long-term support our citizens in need here in Davis County.
Do you have numbers of the homeless, you know, what areas have the most homeless?
So we don't necessarily have, like, I guess you could say on the point in time count, specific jurisdictions. But, I mean, we could just say, like, what we saw. We saw a lot of folks that, it's always kind of funny. I think Clearfield is almost the cutoff area. If you're kind of in the Farmington, or excuse me, the Clearfield, Kaysville area, and north, folks are kind of standing a little bit more towards Weber County, and then anything Farmington and south, folks are starting to tend towards North Salt Lake, Woods Cross, because right there is just a hop, skip, and a jump to Salt Lake City, where you got the Wigan Center and all those kind of other entities. So during our point in time count, we did just see a lot of individuals that were kind of in Clearfield, some in Layton. But also the big thing is that the most common thing was that folks were in cars. So granted, we don't have a large camp, and that's always a great thing. That's a positive thing. But we see our folks that are in need out here, they're just a little bit more mobile. So, I mean, they could be over at the Planet Fitness, but then they would transfer over here to the Smiths and Bountiful. And it's a very mobile population, which is why we really rely heavily on Open Doors, who kind of makes these partnerships. We get phone numbers, and they say, hey, we're going to be coming out here during this point in time count. Don't be shocked and alarmed, and let your friends know. So it's not, I guess you will say, it's simply Clearfield and then North Salt Lake. Just, again, wherever the resources are going to be closer for folks to access.
Thank you.
You said that there's been a positive response to these different, instead of a shelter, these housing, whether they're a transitional or a long-term option. Where are you, like, how does that play into the communities, and where are you getting your data for that? Like, just so we can understand, when you say positive response,
just the positive response from whether it be citizens or city councils. Like, whenever I've had these conversations, then folks are like, yeah, this is great. We just want to see, like, what all would come from this, what support. Because we do not have any intention of saying, you know what, we're just going to try to do something over here and just kind of let everyone else figure it out. So the data just comes from just one-on-one interactions with
just your observations as you've gone around and presented to various. Okay, that's very helpful. I mean, these do seem like, you know, obviously the idea would be to help those that need to get out of homelessness, but I think you do have a chronic homeless population that would probably continue to need assistance and help no matter what.
Yes, no, absolutely. And that's where the one benefit, the one positive of permanent supportive housing is that we get to see long-term, what do people need? What are they going to be required? And it's just the plain truth that there are going to be some people who just need lifelong services.
Sure.
And we just believe that the compassionate model is that they are basically surrounded in a stable community for the rest of their lives. Because just to ask a person who is 65 years old and disabled and living on a fixed income and dealing with schizophrenia to say, hey, we need you to figure it out so we can move you on to the next one, that's not really something that we see that is what really benefits and what actually creates community.
The mayor and I had the opportunity to tour Switchpoint in Tooele last year, and it's a fascinating facility. It's converted old school elementary school that they turned into.
Smart.
So they've got the transitional housing in the back, permanent housing there as well. So it's all right there. Case managers are on site to help. This is the thing we talk about quite often. So in previous life, I was the neighborhood services manager in Yuma. And this was my role, was actually working with the homeless population. And the wraparound services was sorely missed. And this is 2012, where we were talking about these wraparound services. And we're doing a much better job. I do remember at one point, we had a housing coalition conference, and Utah was invited to speak in Arizona, because Utah was doing it right at the time. At the same time, we did it so good that people started moving in. And it was kind of over flooding and overworking what we had available. And so Utah, I think, has had to adjust and adapt to the circumstances, and I think that's what we're trying to do now, right? So we're adapting to this influx of homelessness that's coming to Utah, because it's a great place to live and it's a nice area. So anyway, I just wanted to share that with you. I think Switchpoint was a great example, There's even one they shared that's down in St. George, off of St. George Boulevard, that you would have no idea that it's a housing down there. I don't know.
I still
don't even know where it is, and I keep looking for it, and it's really fascinating. So Switchpoint owns that one down there too. So if you get a chance, maybe we can get a tour of Switchpoint so you can see that model. It's really fascinating.
So that'd be awesome. Really quick, Ryan, what specifically would you want from a city council? Are you looking for, what are you looking for from a city council?
From a city council, just hypothetically, if we were to identify a parcel, support. Like if we were
support
to,
for
like zoning.
The
and
rezoning.
Yes.
Okay. And so you'll have your own, you are working with investors or builders to build these projects.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, Davis County, we're not looking at being like the landlord or anything like that. We're looking at facilitating and helping coordinate that with developers.
May I ask you, back on your slide where you talk about the housing retention and positive exits, return to homelessness within 2 years, you had mentioned that Salt Lake County has already done some of these models. Are these numbers from Salt Lake City? Is this Davis County data? Is it statewide? Okay.
Statewide.
Is Salt Lake City seeing different numbers than this? Do you have that type of data?
I don't have that specific kind of aggregate data, but again, this is statewide because we do have. Because in fact, what's interesting is that Davis County, we are the last county of our size that does not have a permanent supportive housing project. Now, granted, Davis Behavioral Health, they are working on theirs, as you see on Kaysville. But separate from that, there is none. Tooele County has one, Weber, Utah County, Salt Lake County, obviously. So this is statewide. As far as if Salt Lake City, like compared city-wise, any differences, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Mr. Parker, this is Councilmember Bangeter. May I just ask a question of some of your inside input regarding propensity for crime or mischievousness in close proximity to where such a facility might be located and the impact that could have on the local police enforcement in an area? Can you give us a little feel for that?
Yes, happy to, and thank you for that. Forgive me, I think I'm just going to look at this camera because I don't... I'm just going to make sure I'm just talking to the right person. One of my experiences as well prior to this is that I was a property manager for a permanent supportive housing project for the Central City Apartments, operated by First Step House in downtown Salt Lake. As far as on-site crime, it's honestly that there is no hard data that I can provide. What I can provide is the fact that these sites are secure through on-site staffing 24/7. So that's the big component of it, is that there's going to be staff that controls visitors, staff that controls sign-in and sign-out. So it's not a free-for-all. So in fact, I'd say these environments are a lot more controlled than what you would say in just your standard average apartment complex. And then as far as the impact on local neighborhoods, it all depends really on what we were talking about with the partnerships, because in Salt Lake City and downtown, in that area on Fifth South, not only do you have the Central City Apartments, you also do have a First Step House rehab treatment facility. And so you do have good coordination with the local neighborhood, like community councils, as well as coordination with local law enforcement, where we basically have just kind of a good neighbor system. I always have contact information from our neighboring businesses, our neighboring apartments, and people would be able to let us know, like, hey, we're seeing a lot of people smoking cigarettes over here at, like, you know, 3 a.m., things like that. As far as crime, I wish I could provide any, like, hardcore data, but all I can provide is that, really, at this point, these are controlled environments, and outside of them, what we have seen service providers do is just coordinate with our best efforts with law enforcement. You see, with the warming center in Clearfield, we do contract with Davis County Sheriffs. Clearfield, they have a homeless resource officer, so law enforcement is already pretty excited to be involved with folks that are trying to mitigate this so that they're not carrying all the weight. So as far as crime and permanent supportive housing projects, while there is no data, what I can confidently express is that the model, the way that these are designed internally, is that there are safety control measures so that it's not a simple free-for-all, people entering in at all hours. You have sign-in, sign-out, you have controlled guests, you have controlled traffic.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have any other questions for him? I guess if we have no other questions, we'll just thank you very much for
your
presentation. We appreciate it. And our I-15 update has been moved on to for a couple of weeks, I think?
July 7th, correct.
July 7th.
We'll have Mike Romero, project manager, here to present, and then we need to make some decisions on the aesthetics along the I-15, our interchange, and the pedestrian bridges and all that. So they're going to be looking for some answers.
Okay.
Or direction.
We're going to have some idea on budget.
I'm hoping. Okay. I've asked Mike to see if we can't get a better budget numbers and what those estimates might be.
Okay. Do we? Anybody have any reason for a closed session?
Not at this time, no.
If not, I'll ask for a motion to adjourn.
After the work session, meeting. After the regular meeting.
Okay, can I get a
motion to adjourn?
So moved. Sorry, all second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you all.
Aye.